Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Muhammad. Dr. Ava is a gifted attorney, researcher, lecturer, and author of 5 books. She received her Juris Doctorate from Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and is a member of the New York Bar Association. Dr. Ava has been featured in Essence magazine many times and was named by Essence as being one of America's most powerful black women. Join Dr. Ava every Thursday evening on Elevated Places, where you will hear a message that will provide you with the tools needed to repair and uplift the spirit, moral character, and living condition of the black man and woman. Our call-in number is 347-324-5091, or visit us on our radio show page at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. And now, here is your host, Dr. Ava Muhammad.
Taking the call. can't hear. Yes, if you all could be patient with us, we're trying to work through some technical issues. Yes, ma'am. We're aware of that. Yes, ma'am. We are aware of that. We're trying to rectify that now. Okay, thank you. Come like
working on doing something different. But this setup is only one way. The only other thing is putting someone's cell phone next to one of the speakers as a temporary until they can get this other thing. So the Gettner is definitely something you need.
Okay. So you're saying...
Let me put it up here first. Thank you. Donations on a regular basis, we really, really want you to do that. You are who it's all about. We need everybody, all of us need to pitch in and do our part. We want to ask the panelists to make a brief statement. I just want a brief statement to go through in your area of expertise. Maybe take about 30 seconds, perhaps a minute, to let us know why you think this topic that we're discussing today, the economic blueprint and our survival, is key. I want to start with you, Brother Robert.
As-salamu alaykum. First of all, let me thank the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan for allowing me to serve and to help him in the mission. And I want to thank Sister Dr. Ava Muhammad for having me on the program and part of this esteemed panel. I guess that's 15 minutes of my 30 seconds. I just want to say that the economic blueprint boils down to this. If we don't unite, we die.
That's it. All right. That's it. That's how you ate. Now, let's check that out. Brother Nuri Muhammad. Yes. Thank you, Brother Robert.
Thank you. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you so much, Dr. Ava, for having me on the show and to be on this esteemed panel. And, of course, we are appreciative of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan giving us not just a subject to talk about tonight, but a purpose for living, period. And we know that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad originally gave us this in the 60s. And one of his titles, of course, we knew him originally just as Dear Holy Apostle. Later, we started to learn him as Messenger of God. Then we now know him to be the exalted Christ. But there's a subtitle attached to all of that that the minister has used describing the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He called him the architect of a new civilization. Well, if an architect devises a plan, it's called a blueprint. We were given the blueprint, but we did not come to the table like we should have as a people to become the general contractors, the subcontractors, the plumbers, the pipe fitters, the carpenters, etc., to build the infrastructure. So he told us, do for self or suffer the consequences. Well, we are suffering those consequences for not doing for self. But we thank Allah that he gave us in the minister of mercy of God. For now, he's given us the economic blueprint again, where that we can escape the consequences that we are suffering as a people for not doing what the architect told us to do when he first wrote the blueprint yesterday. So that is, I believe, why we are here, and it is so important for us to follow the guidance of the minister. As we know, he doesn't just have insight and hindsight, but he has what all messengers have, and that's foresight.
Yes.
So whatever he asks of us to do today, he's not hinging it on what's present only, but he's also looking into the future for what's coming to us as a people. So this is our time to execute the blueprint now, or if we don't, we're going to die. That's what Robert said, we're going to die.
Brother Shah, since I see my national student protocol in the audience, I'm going to do my protocolal duty and pass. I'm just a hype man. I'm like Flavor Flav for Elevated Flavor. So I'm just going to get y'all hype every once in a while. But we're going to go ahead and let y'all hear from the real panelists. I'm going to pass it on down.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum.
Welcome to Detroit for those of you who came from other parts of the country. And it's such an honor to be here. I want to start by giving praise to the Almighty Creator and also recognizing our collective ancestors upon whose backs the wealth of the whole Western Hemisphere is built. It's clear that if we are to survive as a people and to build an economy that allows us to be self-respecting, self-determining men and women, that we have to start with the food economy. In fact, the reality is that the food economy is the first economy of any society. And so it's imperative that we follow the example, the great example that's been created by the Nation of Islam, of creating our own farms, both in rural areas and urban areas, so that we begin to produce our food. Dr. Ridgely was talking to me before the program began, and he was stressing how important it is that we be producers and not just consumers. And
right.
So we'll get more deeply into this as the program goes on, but we just want to really stress it is of the utmost importance that we begin to grow our own food and create the systems for distributing that food so that we're a self-reliant, self-respecting people.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum.
Do for self or die slave. There's a poem that I have. Your brother, you stole my line, so I can't even talk about dying slave. But it's very, very simple. You know, food, clothing, and shelter comes from the land. But somebody got to do the work. In the past 200 years ago, everybody who lived was involved in working in producing some aspect of food, clothing, and shelter. Okay? Then they came up with slavery. And slavery, they had us doing the work. We grew the food. We made the clothes. We built the shelter for them and for us. Then after slavery, we began to do that for us. And they saw that we were going to take over. So what they did was ran us off the land, ran us out of the skills, put us in the city, and gave us a briefcase, and now we got no case. Ship us all across the country running after that gold that we were tricked on the boat to get. You know, the trader made an interpretation, we'd get more gold for our labor.
Right.
Who got the gold? The Beers, the gold fiends. They back over there, they got our gold. We over here killing each other for some gold. Still don't want to do no work trying to play games on one another. Somebody is going to have to do some work. And once we get out of this thinking that we can get something for nothing, we can get together and build a whole new world based on the new mathematics that Master Farah Muhammad is bringing up. As-salamu alaykum.
All right. Now, brothers and sisters, we have already done something. We have accomplished something today.
We started on time, and we're still on time as it relates to our program. Give yourselves a round of applause and the panelists for staying on point. Now, we put together some videos, and I want to direct your attention to the screens. We have a large screen over here to my right and to my left. We have some videos. You know, a lot of times you come to a presentation, you come to a conference, you come to a workshop, and you see a title, but that doesn't really tell you what you're in for. And so instead of coming here and hearing us talk about a lot of different ideas and theories, we want to show you some ideas that others have who are building sustainable communities, who have ideas related to setting up communities where they can make their own...
Grow their own food.
Produce their own fuels, their own energy, and change the reality and also recycle. So we have our first video that is here in the back. Our video presentation, we're ready to start with video number one, our video engineer. Okay, we are not ready to start with our video. Or are we? Excuse me, let me check.
The video
is not showing on the screen. Live radio, brothers and sisters, give you a round of applause. We have a flipper wheel.
Here we go.
Was Masdar City. It is actually translated as Source City, and it's a project in Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates. It's a planned city where they are aimed at being a sustainable, zero-carbon, car-free city. That actual documentary is on Netflix. You can actually look at the whole thing, and one of the most remarkable things is you can't actually drive your car into the city. You have to drive your vehicle and park at a certain location, and then they have a hybrid vehicle that takes you into the city limits. So these are just some ideas, some things that you have to think about. We are now ready for our second video, our video number two, which gives us a little bit of an idea of what some of the things are that people are planning.
Okay.
Sustainable community.
Jump off.
Video two, we're ready.
He wants to hear it too, so we'll just jump off of that and put it over there.
Okay, you got another.
Accountability is the future. Come back and try to remember. I drew airplanes, cities of the future, and underwater cities, and floating cities.
Now, this looks like some sort of submerged stadium or something.
We might go circular cities in the sea. Most of the apartment houses will open out into the sea. You can observe marine life and fish swimming by. There'll be no zoos, no aquariums. Everything will be observed in natural conditions. There will be boating, scuba diving, recreation, and universities built in the sea.
These drawings all made by you?
Yes.
Jacques Fresco is a self-taught scientist, architect, and inventor. For his entire life, he has been deeply committed to investigation, insight, and innovation. A prolific creator and builder, Jacques has been redesigning our entire culture for most of his life. Jacques Fresco doesn't want to just talk about what today will be like tomorrow. He has a plan to build an entire new world from the ground up.
So the models that I make are all transitional, and many of them are only conceptual. Well, not necessarily what the teacher might think of. They're only, let's say they're extrapolations, taking the present and extrapolating forward. But we can't go too far forward if we don't know what new things we're coming to do. Think about the future, remember this. The process with which you think about things is based upon indoctrination, what you're given by your society. So your range of thought is limited by the dominant values of your society. We talk about civilization as though it's a static state, and there are no civilized people yet. It's a process that's constantly going on. As long as you have war, police, prisons, crime, you're in the early stages of civilization, what they call civilization. All the marvels and wonders of technology can amount to nothing unless it elevates humans to their highest potential. This is the aim of the future by design.
Okay. Now, that was the man speaking. His name was Jacques Fresco. He is an American futurist, a social engineer, and his lectures mainly deal with sustainable cities, energy efficiency, natural resource management, cybernetic technology, automation, and the role of science in society. Now, they're doing some things, but we have our own black scientists and engineers who have that same type of knowledge and that same type of far-reaching vision to establish those types of things for us, and that's what we're here to do today. Now, this last video is going to be kind of funny. Some of you will remember it, some of you won't. It is a cartoon, but it has a very serious message behind it. We're ready for part three to light it up a bit, and then we're going to go right into the business of solutions and some of our callers.
The 21st century. Transportation, space travel, robotics, teleconferencing,
right there,
and supersonic sports. This vision of our future was conceived at the Hanna-Barbera Studios. Sometimes the best ideas just drop right out of the sky.
Nice landing, Joe. It's okay, Bill.
Bill Hanna and Joe Barbera, the wizards of animation responsible for some of the best cartoons ever made, were driven by one simple philosophy, entertainment.
See, Bill and I believe in entertainment. We've never tried to preach enough. Just try to project warmth and good feeling. Now, the other basic thing is the kind of character you start out with. All of our successful ones have been distinctive in their own way. Huck, Yogi, Quick Draw McGraw, Top Cat, Fred Flintstone. Each of them has his own strengths and little human failings that make for fun in the story.
Hanna-Barbera Studios.
Thank you. All right, now, you saw in the first clip, it was supposed to stop after you saw the first few things. You saw some cell phones in there, right? You saw some video conferencing. You saw Skype. You're sitting here now. That was in the mid-60s and early 70s. And now some of those things that were in a cartoon are actually everyday realities that you live with right now. So what we're talking about is not a pipe dream. This is not something that is not able to be obtained. It's something that we should really, really think about. And I see some young faces here, and I'm glad to see that. Because you all are the ones that are going to bring these visions into fruition in many cases. So what we want to do is we want to start, and I want to start off with you, Malik Yatini, and talk to us a little bit about changing our minds. You know, we really, really think in terms of black people about going to the store and getting food, or somebody bringing food to us. And I really want you to just talk to us a little bit about the importance of creating our own food economy. Where, you know, we can get clean food, food we know where it came from, food that we know it doesn't have any harmful pesticides. Why is that so important? It seems like an easy thing to accomplish, but why is that so hard?
I appreciate your question, brother, if I understand it correctly. And let me start by saying, you asked me to first address the issue of changing our minds, which is really the major issue. And I'm sure that people in the audience and the listening audience know that a tremendous job has been done on the minds of black people in this country and throughout the Western Hemisphere. And so probably the biggest job that's been done is that we have been separated from our own sense of our own divinity. And so we don't see ourselves as divine beings with the same capabilities as other human beings on the face of the earth to do for ourselves. And so we're in a position where we mentally see ourselves as being dependent upon others. And we all know that our physical reality is a manifestation of what begins in our mind. And so the major job that we have to do is we have to recapture an understanding of really who we are, of this divine spark which is in each one of us, and the capabilities which that gives us to do anything that we need done for ourselves. And really that changing of our minds will automatically change our conditions overnight. Now in terms of food, it's clear that those who feed you control you. And so for black people in this country in particular, but really for all people in this country, there's a conspiracy by Monsanto and by big agriculture to control the food sources that we consume. And in fact, this is really a global conspiracy where Monsanto has gone as far as to try to control the seeds that, from which plants grow on a global basis. This is perhaps the most insidious plan that we've seen in the last century, and it has a tremendous implication for our ability to chart a self-determined course for ourselves in the future. And so one of the first things that we have to do is we have to reorient our minds and understand that food and agriculture has to be at the basis of developing this society that we're striving to bring into being. And so we have to see ourselves not only as consumers of food, but as producers of food. And as Dr. Ava Muhammad so astutely shared with us at the beginning of the program, beginning in the 40s, and even more so now, the vast majority of the population of black people in this country are living in urban areas. And so not only do we have to have farms in the rural areas, the traditional farms that we've known about and that we've come to expect, but we also have to look at how we grow food in urban areas where the majority of our people are concentrated. I was talking to Dr. Ridgely before the program began about the difficulties of bringing food from the farm that he runs in Georgia to cities in the north. And he was telling me that one of the major challenges is that he can bring food to the north, but then he's got a truck that's coming back empty to the south, which doesn't make economic sense. And so we have to find a way to be producing things wherever we are, so that truck is coming from the south, when it comes to Detroit or Cleveland or Toledo or Chicago, is leaving that city going back to the south with some goods that we produce. And so we have to change our whole orientation and stop conceiving of ourselves as being inferior to white people or Arabs or whoever might be controlling our food. And in fact, depending on what city you are in the United States, there's an ethnic group in every city which is controlling the food system that supplies the food that we consume. In the city of Detroit, it happens to be Chaldeans. Chaldeans are an ethnic group from Iraq, and they have been in the city of Detroit for the last 100 years or so, but over the last 40 or 50 years,
have gotten a tremendous foothold in the grocery business and now control the vast majority of the grocery stores in our community. So we find ourselves as a people dependent upon these other groups who come into our community because they see us as easy prey. And so the main thing that we have to do is we have to change our minds and change our orientation and understand, first of all, that we have the capability to do for self. Secondly, that we have the resources collectively among ourselves to do everything that we need to do to change our condition. We have the wealth among ourselves to build a food system that provides healthy, sustainable food for us and also can generate profits that can fuel the other types of institutions that we have to build for our survival.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Brother Robert, what can we do right now as it relates to urban planning? What can the average citizen, not somebody who's about to get be a doctor, not somebody who is, reads books on urban planning, what can the average citizen who is living in Chicago or Detroit or Harlem or Brooklyn or Columbia, South Carolina, what can they do right now?
Right now they can go to Economic Blueprint and sign up. That's the first thing to do. Why? Because it's painless. A nickel a day, 35 cents a week, $1.40 a month, $18.20 a year, that's painless. That's what you can do. If you're in the listening audience, that's exactly what you can do. There are those of you who are not in our live audience, but are in the listening audience, and you, as it says in the Book of Kings, you are now halted between two opinions. Some of you are bought into this democracy, and some of you are bought into this constitutional republic, but the truth of the matter is it's been stolen from you by the shadow government, but also by major corporations. And there used to be a countervailing power that used to hold the corporations in check, which was, one was big labor, in spite of its sordid background. Big labor was a way of keeping corporations in check and government regulation, going back 100 years to Theodore Roosevelt with his trust buster and breaking up trust. But what has happened, we've seen now a reversal of that, whereby now big corporations, as Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, we cannot compete with the cut-rate stores unless we unite. We can never compete with Walmart and all the other big stores because they use what's called the economy of scale. They buy together. So while we must involve ourselves in the Muhammad economic blueprint, the first thing we got to do as a people is grow up and stop being like petulant little children who want instant gratification. This is a long, hard struggle for the liberation of our children and grandchildren. Let me say this. The corporations have come back now, and they have bought America's democracy from them, whatever was left. Now they're putting in politicians on the local level who are now cutting out any populist notion of you being able to vote in who you want to vote in. Right here in the city of Detroit, there is a third level of government. It's not coming necessarily from the capital of Michigan. It's not the man that they appointed here. There are private corporations right now who are running this city. And what I'm trying to say to you, and nonprofit organizations that are running the city, so the elected government really, in one sense, almost doesn't matter.
Right.
Now, the point I want to make to you, beloved, is this. You and I must now understand that there's an old world going out and a new world coming in.
Right.
And we must be a part of the transition. So if you want to Google on your phone, Google transition villages, transition cities. Because white people have figured out, as you've seen on these videos, that climate change, peak oil, and economic downturn has caused them now to understand that they can no longer run out to the suburbs. So now what they're doing is they're allowing the infrastructure and the inner city to deteriorate so that the property values fall down, the school systems fail, there are no services, so now you naturally want to move out to the suburbs. And now we're seeing a suburbanization of poverty where more poor people through Section 8 are now mobile and going out to the suburbs while they move back in the city and now begin to re-gentrify areas that were integrated and gentrify areas that used to be black. Right here in the city of Detroit, where Ford Field sits, is Paradise Valley. Right here in the city of Detroit, right over there, there's a place called Lafayette Park. It is a modernist apartment complex, or if you will, or housing development, where the black bottom set. These people have in mind to redevelop 7.2 square miles of the downtown and extended downtown, even though Detroit is 139 square miles, and you can fit San Francisco, New York, and Boston in this great city. We must now come back. We must now contribute to the economic blueprint, because it's only through our collective wealth that we're able to take on the corporations with the help of Allah and His Christ.
All right. But Jack, I just wanted to jump in here right quick. It's two things that I wanted to say. One of the things that we have to realize, you know, I was listening on Facebook News, and on Facebook after the trial of Jordan Davis, you know, we now know that it is illegal to not kill a black man. That's what I'm saying. It is illegal to not kill a black man because he was convicted of attempted murder. You know, it was a mistrial on killing Jordan Davis, right? So we understand that somebody asked him, what should we do? What should be done now? You know, as they see me as a community activist, I said, I'm going to do what I've been doing. And we need to get our people to do what we are already doing. That is going into the direction of separation and independence. The overarching theme of Elevated Places is separation. But let me say this. We are talking about and we clapping for separation and independence, but we haven't made that donation of $18.20. And the ones that made it in 2013 probably haven't done it yet in 2014. Because you have to pay for your own liberation and your own separation. So no one's going to give it to you. So when we're talking this about separation and independence, we really have to put our mouths out, whatever it is. Because we got to make something happen. The reason why I'm saying this is because I'm also not necessarily in North Carolina anymore because I'm coming to Detroit. But I'm coming to Detroit on two reasons. But a minister's coming to Detroit. But my job is coming here because the political structure of Detroit is wiped out. And as we were talking about, the Koch brothers are doing it. So as I'm looking at one world going down, I'm also trying to help build a new world. But the thing that Brother Robert said, we have to come together because they are united. And that video that you watched, be very clear that in the black community, I'm in the climate change movement. I'm in there where Sierra Club gets a budget of $100 million a year to do climate change stuff. I'm in with organization 350.org, and they're talking about this whole climate change. And I was with this organization called Green Fest, and I'm seeing all the alternatives. They're knowing that this is death, and they're trying to lead death. So what they still perpetrate on us, the lifestyle of death, while they're trying to leave it. And until we listen, see, one thing we have to be very clear. We do not worship Minister Farrakhan, but we are so thankful to Almighty God, Allah, for the divine guidance that He brings. But it's not good enough for us to clap on thanking Him for the divine guidance and not using it, because when Brother Robert brought up the shadow government, we got to understand that there's a concerted effort to fight against us, and we need to do all that we can do to back the man that's given us the right direction, the right plan, and if you listen to those directions, you will get to your destination on time, safely, without any problems.
Great point. Dr. Ava. You know, recently I was able to talk to some of the area leaders here in Detroit in preparation for us coming here. They talked to us a little bit about some of what was brought up as it relates to the emergency management and the gentrification that's going on. This seems to be a pattern in many black communities where they'll let it go ahead and go down to the point where there's all kinds of crime and the property rates go down and people don't want to go there, and then all these speculators come in. In fact, I was told by an individual that some of those individuals who came in, those corporations who came in from outside of Detroit, have gotten sweetheart deals and, you know, low interest rate loans and things like that. One of them was for a hockey stadium here. They were given some deals that the people who were here in the city who owned businesses weren't given. And Malik Yakini, you can bear witness if that's the truth. I think it is true. So, Dr. Ava, talk to us a little bit about that, because it's not just a problem here in Detroit. It's happening in Chicago. It's happening in New York. It's happening in many places. And I want you to talk to us a little bit about the spiritual component of how we have to turn this thing around, please.
Well, I'll just say very briefly, and thank you for that, Brother Shah, that to the points that have been raised by the panelists and enlightened, we've been enlightened already just in this first hour. Collective communal behavior is natural to black people. This Western European concept of individualism and greed and acquisition of material things to the exclusion of any moral or spiritual commitment to your fellow human being, by buying into that, that as much as racism is responsible for our current condition. It's a combination of, as the minister said, multinational corporations hijacked the U.S. government decades ago. You can go all the way back to when Theodore Roosevelt was president. He was attempting to stop this from happening. And even George Washington made comments in speeches about this happening, what is happening today. Being exhorted by political leaders to just vote is misleading, it's misguided, and it's unfair to you and I as a people. Voting is not the solution to our problem. The solution to our problem is economic self-sufficiency. And we will not get it unless we act collectively. As Brother Shah just pointed out, this is a propaganda. What white people will do, white corporations do, if I say the word Vietnam, if I name that country to you, those of us who are old enough to recall, either we know nothing about it at all if we're young, if we're older, when we hear Vietnam, we think war-torn, desolate. When we hear Afghanistan or Iraq, but when you see these countries, and if you go there, they are stunning, they are beautiful, they are filled with natural resources. But that is done to turn the public away from plans such as occurring in Detroit. Downtown, where we are right now, stunning, beautiful. But when you go out in the neighborhood, among our people, it is desolate. What is done when there's a plan to shut down an area, the first thing you'll see is a gigantic police station come up. The second thing you'll see is the shutting down of playgrounds, basketball courts, and finally, the school system shuts down. This pushes our children out into the streets, and it makes them inventory for a prison industrial complex. As a result of that, you fill up the prisons with free labor. If you get arrested and locked up now in 2014, you're not going to just sit in a cell. You're going to be put to work. Now, we have gone back to sharecropping, where you are in jail and you're going to be charged a daily rate for your food and board while you are locked up, so that your work that you do, and you're not going to just be making license plates, you're going to be processing insurance applications. All right, if you know anything about computer programming, you're going to be put into that. This is the free labor that this country was built upon. We generate more than $1 trillion a year, black people in America, even in our desperate condition. We have been shut off of all the jobs. President Obama is giving accolades to the auto industry for bouncing back from its need for a bailout. And it's back everything except manufacturing, which is where jobs are. And so it is time for us to take the nickel a day that the minister is asking us to put into a pool so that we can A, acquire land, B, develop residential communities, and C, biggest of all, create jobs for ourselves. We have got to stop allowing people to come in and open up these little disgusting, nasty stores that are called convenience stores. convenient because they're easy to get to. But we go in them and there's cans that have cobwebs on them. We are made to spend our money through bulletproof glass. There is no such thing as fresh produce coming into our neighborhood. And so nothing short of a consciousness and desire and love for the brother and sisterhood. We have got to want for our brothers and sisters what we want for ourselves. And that goes into the mindset change that my brother was talking about earlier.
Outstanding. Thank you. Well, we're going to take some calls. We have a few callers. This might be a little bit of an adventure. We're going to have to really listen carefully because we know the acoustics here kind of hard to hear, but we're going to try it. I want to go to, are we going to go to John with this question? You've been holding.
This is John. Can you hear me? This is John. Can you hear me? Hello, this is John. Can you hear me? My question is, it's the economic blueprint divine. Are any of the Nation of Islam founders divine? Were any of them considered God? That's my question. Can you hear me? Again, here is my question. Is the economic blueprint considered divine?
That's because he turned this off so it won't be feedback. So it's kind of be like,
see? Can you hear me? Here's my question. Is the economic blueprint considered divine?
Turn that down when they speak and then turn it back up.
We can't hear
that.
The
man, he's coming back up.
Well, we can't separate the man from the mission.
Okay, why do we have to turn that down?
This is my question. Is the economic blueprint considered divine?
Okay,
so they can hear again.
Okay.
And that his mission is what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad signed up for, and it's what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan signed up for, and it's what we signed up for. So to the extent that we are now being given the tools, divinely inspired tools, to now be on time and to do what's on time to save ourselves from the conditions they're about to hit, the downturn in energy, the economic downturn, and climate change. These things right now are what these people are, when we talk about transition, what Brother Terrence was talking about, there are groups meeting all across this country that just deal in that kind of thing, where they are planning to use renewable energy, solar, wind, water. They're not interested in using carbon. They're looking for a post-carbon world. But in the meantime, on the used car lot, they're selling you an Oldsmobile 98 with a big V8 engine when they know doggone well that they're driving hybrids. They've made hybrids more expensive. They've made good food at Old Food more expensive. They've made solar energy, the initial investment, more expensive. So everything to save and preserve their life and their civilization, they put it out of our reach while they throw us the trash and they put the treasure. So yes, the economic blueprint is defined, and those who will exercise their will to turn it from lemons into lemonade, yes, they're God. With a little G.
Thank you. All right. Brother Richard,
if you look at the economic blueprint and what it actually is asking us to do, it says pull your resources together and do for yourself. Love your brother. Don't criticize your own. Things like that. Now, why would a people have to be taught that which is natural to all other human beings on the planet?
Right.
Why is it that someone has to come and teach you to do your own clothes,
to teach your own children to love your own self. Why would that have to be done except that it was something that was undivine, that brought something that was divine, meaning the children of God, to a level of a beast? So yes, God had to come to reverse a process by a demonic person who took the child of God and put it in the hog trough.
Right.
So yes, it has the divine, but ask why with something as simple as putting your resources together and doing for yourself, God had to come to teach a people something so simple that must have been a devil over them before he came.
Very good point. All right, we're going to go to another caller. Do you have something more to add, Dr. Ava? Did you want to add something on that?
Oh, no, sir.
Okay, we're going to go to, okay. We're going to go to, well, we're going to go to another caller. And we're going to come. All right, we want to go to Eric. Eric has a comment. Eric, you are live on Elevated Places. Can you hear us?
Yes, assalamu alaikum. May Allah peace be on us all. I'm excited to hear Minister Farrakhan's lecture on Sunday. How strong is the foundation? Can we survive? These are strong words to speak to self-imposed, economically rich, weak-minded people. How strong is the foundation? In truth, economically, we have never had a foundation. Capitalism has done absolutely nothing for the black man and woman or the working poor in this nation. Here's a question I want to pose to everybody. What economic system does Allah prefer? It should not be surprising to us that nature is socialist. Allah is the author of a social universal system of distribution that everyone and everything benefits from. It is time to take a serious look into creating an economic system based on the natural order of things, of which I am involved in right now.
Point. Brother Nuri, Minister Farrakhan has spoken about this. He talks about the human body and how everything, when you eat it, all the vitamins and everything is distributed to the different parts of the body, and everyone gets what they need. I think that's what the caller was talking about. Can you deal with that a little bit?
Well, exactly. You know, they like to label that socialism, but it really is the natural system by which God created the body to work. And the socialists have just made a cheap replica of what God himself made with the human body. We are from the earth, and the earth is us. The most honorable Elijah Muhammad said that when Allah created himself from triple darkness, that he created his home planet simultaneously. Yeah, that means at the same time. So whatever he was making himself up out of, he was making his home planet up out of. So that's why he took the leaf off the tree and put it next to the hand, it looks just the same. If you were to look at the way the lakes, rivers, and streams move on the earth, and look at the way veins and arteries move through the body, it's an exact reference. The bone of man is like the rock of earth. When we cry, we have tears, but inside the tears is salt, water, just like the sea. We are the earth, and the earth is us. So the natural system of living is for us to be tied into that which we came from and that which is a duplicate of us. You cannot sustain life without giving it life. So we have to go back to the earth to get that food.
Why do you think that that's outstanding point? But I've run into that question with people about capitalism because they say, you know, well, capitalism works. You know, it's an economic system that works. And socialism has been demonized. Communism demonized. Why do you think that is? Can you talk to us about that? I mean, I know you know why that is, but Brother Robert, I'll let you get on with it, Brother Robert.
You know, if you look at, you know, what did the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, well, he was taught by Master Farah Muhammad, there were three classes of people. There was the 10%, the 5%, and the 85%. Now, the 85% are blind, deaf, and dumb, poison, animal eaters, and they'll use their slaves and tools. The 10% and the 5% basically have the same knowledge, but the 5% are trying to free the 85% by giving them knowledge, wisdom, and understanding, while the 10% are using the wisdom to hide it from them and to suck their blood and keep them as slaves. So, you know, whenever you look at capitalism, it is a way for the 10% shadow government, a.k.a. the Illuminati, a.k.a. the Bilderbergers, a.k.a. the Committee of 300, the eight royal families, whatever group you want to call it, that 1%, you know, that conglomerate, the synagogue of faith, it's their way of being able to have 1% of the population in possession of 50% of the wealth by which they can keep all people slaves. If the world was set up the way God originated it, and Allah, first of all, this is the one thing, Allah did not create any human being without first doing an appraisal and an assessment of all the resources on the earth, and knew that if he brought us into the world, we could be successful, rich, and wealthy, and powerful. Otherwise, he wouldn't have brought us into existence. For Allah, chief attribute of God is Rabb, Lord, meaning the creator, nourisher, sustainer, and the evolver of a thing, stage by stage, until it reaches perfection. Well, God is the only thing perfect. Well, how are you going to have a broke God? A poor God? Well, if God brought us into existence to become a perfect reflection of him, then he already looked at the wealth of the earth and knew all of us could be wealthy. Not 1%, not 10%, not 20%. Every last human being that lives on the earth can have freedom, justice, equality, and be rich if it was properly distributed.
Thank you. Thank you, Brother Miller. First, Brother Robert, and then Dr. Lisa.
I just want to clap for Brother Newer, yeah. I mean, I just love my fellow student ladies.
Yes.
Every one of them, I see God coming up out. And so I was caught in the rapture of what he was saying. But it's important, because the minister coined the phrase that he who gives you the diameter of your knowledge prescribes for you the circumference of your action. So when we hear the word socialism, we think about it particularly in the way that Karl Marx described it. Karl Marx, not believing in God, so black people have a hard time wrapping their heads around anything that's disconnected from God. Scientific socialism laughed or was created in a sense to mock utopian socialism. Utopian socialism predated scientific socialism, and utopian socialism was through advocating a world, as Brother Nuri laid out, where all people can get from it what they need and can contribute to it whatever it is that God gave them the talent to do. But the scientific socialists came along looking at the capitalist system, and they too believed in unlimited production and no respect for the environment or the creation that God gave. So what we have to do is understand is that when God gives us a definition, socialist, meaning men or group of men for one common cause, he has given us what you call in law, I think, a stipulated definition. He has given us the definition of socialism. So it's not Karl Marx, it's not any of these other thinkers. It's what God said, or his Christ said, that socialism was. So we've got to be men or groups of men and women with what for one common cause. And what is that? That is, first and foremost, for our own survival. See, we cannot thrive if we don't survive. So that's the prerequisite. But resilience is something that is in ecology. Resilience is this. Resilience is the ability of a social ecological system to absorb a disturbance or some kind of trauma and not lose its identity, its function, and its purpose. So resilience then is about the survival, and once we survive, then when all the dust clears, when the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says the hereafter we are sure of, he says we'll make unlimited progress, that then means that then we're going to thrive if we just survive.
And Dr. Ridgely?
These terms, capitalism, socialism, communism, are all ways trying to explain different economic system, and economics is my area, and one day I'm going to write a book with a whole new economics, because the basis of economics is based on a lie, at the very root of it.
By definition, it says economic unlimited want over scarce resources. Now, we're taught in the Holy Quran that the resources of Allah are what? Unlimited. Right? And we're taught by the teachers of Elijah Muhammad that we should limit our want. We should have control over ourselves. So we have control over our wants to make sure we don't want so much that we deprive somebody else. And the resources are unlimited. And because my mind only got, we only deal with one book of mathematics, that's why we think limited resources, because we don't know how to extract from what we have already, because evidently that plane that came over the Dover Rock, January 26, 2011, the way that thing shot up, is working on a whole new paradigm of energy. Now, that energy that shows, and we know that what Master Ra Muhammad has waiting for us, once we're able to handle it, will remove fossil fuel, that black gold that everybody's fighting over. It completely transformed the whole way we do anything, including farming. But what we have to do is get our minds together. Like they say in the cities, they talk about this food desert. Ain't no food desert. That's brain desert. Okay? Our brain is deserted. We have to now get our young people to get into the sciences, into the math, and the agriculture, and the chemistry, and the physics. Because Master Farad Muhammad has a new world waiting to be given to us, but we are not ready to do nothing with it, because we should be spectators waiting for somebody to do for us what we can do for ourselves. We've got to show him that he's worthy of something, because he gives us a whole new idea. We kind of manufacture it into a product, and then you can distribute that product to Detroit. I can come over here and get that product, bring food up, take the product back down south, but you got to have a product. And he can't give it to us as we are, because all we will do is talk about it, and the white folks will pick it up and make a product out of it. We want wisdom, knowledge, but we don't want to do no work. And the only thing we do is talk, and the enemy takes it and makes a product out of it. The next thing we do, we walk around in his product. So no, the whole basis is teaching you economics is all a lie based on our teaching, and science is all a lie because it's a trick to get you away from yourself and to make you think that you got to fight somebody for something that is in a plenty to everybody.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Wisdom. We have so many calls here. We're going to take a call now from 216, which I believe is the Cleveland area code, 216. You're on the air, Elevated Places. Your question?
Do you know the people that live there?
You've been involved for many years on the Nation of Islam farm. This is a real work, something real that you have done. Your hands have been in the dirt, your knees on the ground, your wife, your family. Talk to us a little bit about that. You know, we don't even like thinking about the farm, black folks, and you brought the black people. We don't even like thinking about that. We understand and we know that we did that and been there and done that, so to speak, but when it comes to the farm, it's hard to get a city folks to come down there and see what's going on. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank the Honorable Benedict Lewis Farrakhan for giving me the opportunity to work out my salvation. Me and my wife laughed when they said, I can listen, you and your wife, y'all sacrificing so much. Excuse me, we're living. We prepared for y'all when we figure out your life here. Okay. Yes, it is a lot of hard work. However, when I go through that field and I look back behind me and see what I have done and then see a product come out of that and bring you that product and you tell me that's the sweetest watermelon you ever had, that can't be replaced. That can't be replaced. So, you know, me and my wife, yeah, we work very, very hard, and we can't wait to get back to the farm. Why? Because I'm living. Y'all just trying to figure out, yeah, what y'all gonna do. Y'all confused. I have the stars in my teeth. Y'all so confused.
You don't know what you want to do with yourself. So, yeah, come down to the farm, and when we have the young people come, we like to explain to them that agriculture is the root of civilization. You ever heard of a bean counter? Yeah, that's where it's like, I counted. But in fact, in ancient Egypt, that's what we had to develop people who can count the beans. Because we produced so many beans, and we had to distribute the beans, we had a bean counter. Then we had to develop astronomy, because we had to know what time it is. Because if you plant at the wrong time, that plant ain't coming up. You best know what time it is. The plant said, you crazy, man. I'm not coming up. I want to grow so I can produce a fruit. You planted me at the wrong time. You got to know astronomy. You got to know about how to survey, how to lay out your land. You got to know about chemistry. The word chemistry comes from the word chemist, which is ancient Egypt, meaning black. And when the Arabs came to Egypt, they saw us practicing a science. They called it chemistry, the science of the black. But yet now we are so afraid of doing any type of mathematics, they got us all spaced out and crazy. So we like our young people to come to the farm and we explain to them what are all the different things in society that you can do to build something for each other, to serve each other. It starts first from the land, then it comes to transforming something from the land to serve a human need. Now, as long as you're serving a human need, you can always get paid because people go pay for something they need. However, if they trick you into a liberal arts education, you can only get a job by working for a white man's corporation, then they got you run all over the country doing nothing, putting you in an office somewhere, talking about you're in a personnel department, PR, and you got nothing that you can reduce anything with. No, we got to get out to the fact, get your hands dirty, and your mind clean. Your hands dirty, and your mind clean.
I got a footnote to add to what he said, Dr. Richard, because we're trying to figure out how we can get people back into farming. And I think that what we've discovered is that as a people, we have two really big group ingrains.
Come on.
Which is a past bad experience that produces negative emotions or physical pain. But there's a phobia that we've developed for reading.
Come on.
Huh?
Come on.
That's why they're saying it's the best place to hide something from the niggas and put in the book. Because they know we're not going to read it. Why? Because they know that every time we pick up a history book, we know we were there, but we don't see ourselves present, so we develop a fear of even wanting to look at it. When we pick up scripture, we always see that we're not present in the scripture. It's always white Jesus, white angels, white prophets, white Abraham, et cetera, et cetera. So that phobia, but we also have a phobia for farming. Because the last time we were planting, growing, in the field, picking, cotton, tobacco, indigo, it was for white people. So we have in our mind a hidden command that keeps us from wanting to go back to the land to do it, because in our mind we associate farming with slavery. But I think I got it figured out. I know what we're going to have to look. I don't tell me how it's going to cost you, but I think I'm going to have to get me a tractor with candy paint on it, air conditioned. And can you give me some 50 inch? Candy paint, 50 inch rim. And then, when I come off the corner, I'll be hitting switch.
Come on.
And I think that if we can get three wheel motion, some 10,000 wire Dayton, candy paint in the rack, top air conditioner, I think the end of the sales is in the corner.
Yeah, that is
good. I think we can get us back in the farm. I'm just saying.
That's right.
Part that you thought about slavery, now that still exists. Yes, people want to go back into farming, but I'm just going to run something down y'all straight up. I've been down at that farm for like 19 years now, and y'all want me to grow it organic, which means sweat. And then you're going to compare our crop to the chemical price at the Atlanta wholesale market, and you expect me to deliver to Chicago, to Philadelphia, to Atlanta, to Houston, for the wholesale price in Atlanta. Yeah, you give me some engrams because I've been down there. Because, I've accepted to be a slave, but not many other people don't accept this. So you're going to have to be willing. That's why we call it meet me halfway. You're going to have to be willing to pay some money for some decent food.
Right.
Or you're going to have to go it yourself. In your hoop houses or your whatever you want to do. You have to grow it yourself because ain't nobody going to be your slave forever.
Thank you. I'm looking.
And, you know, I would just say to that, too, that one dilemma, of course, is, not one, but here's the problem. We live with white people. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, as long as we live with white people, we will live under them. And our perception of reality is damaged because we see the world through their perception, which is a damaged perception of reality. It's what produced this idea that everything is limited, there's not enough of anything, which is contrary, as the panelists have all pointed out. This planet is so abundant, it can actually sustain more than 50 billion people living well. There's only 5 billion people on this planet, so why is there poverty? It is because, and you talked about it, Dr. Richard, restrictive law, it is because there is greed. What brings an economy down and what is bringing America down is greed. It is when an individual's needs move into want and the wants move into an excess, which not only robs our fellow human beings of their essential requirements, it creates freakish behavior. Now, what do I mean by that? When you have more money, more wealth than you have earned through your efforts, and someone actually put a number on it in a study, that you can hardly find anybody that has more than $100 million who is not a thief, or who is not a liar, or who is not immoral. Because God wants us to live beautifully, comfortably. But how many cars can you buy? How many homes can you own before you get tired of shopping? You know, how many men or women can you lay down with? You understand? Your brain starts degenerating when you live in a manner that is contrary to the will of the Creator. And His will is that we all have life and have it abundantly. When you look at Caucasian people, because of their limited time on the planet, they engage in suicidal behavior. Some of these sports that they have in the Olympics, we would never engage in that because it's suicidal. I am not going to lay on a sled and come down some hill at 200 miles per hour with my arms pinned behind me because my hands and arms are to protect my face. You hardly see black people mountain climbing because we know that the mountains were produced by our scientists more than 66 trillion years ago with high explosives, and they're there to balance the earth. They're not there to throw empty beer cans on. That's why Mount Everest kills most people that try to climb it. Those mountains are there to balance this planet and for us to admire. And so part of our problem is, and why we can't see our way to support a black man who is growing food for us, because we think like white people.
Right.
And so we have to begin to distance ourselves. We have to have an exit strategy, and it begins very simple, just residential areas. We don't have to take over the whole country at once. But the Honorable Elijah Muhammad called for a separate state or territory that we can call our own. When they came out, and you know I'm a former prosecutor, that verdict in the Jordan Davis case is incoherent. It's bizarre. And it rises out of the disease of racism. It's manifesting racism. When you, as Brother Terrence reminded us, you can have a man fire 10 rounds into a car of black male teenagers whose crime was that they irritated him with their music. But here's the real crime that came out at the trial, see. The white man pulls up on them. He parked his car so close to them that neither car car can open its door. That's an act of aggression. How many of you have ever heard loud music at a light that was so loud you didn't hear it, you felt it in your kidneys? Did you get out of your car and go over to the drive? You're going to turn it off and pull out a 9mm? That is not the nature or the natural behavior of a human being. What you said to yourself is, in 2 minutes, I'll be going my way, and they will be going their way. This was a gas station. This was not 3 a.m. at his house. He woke up like George Zimmerman with his mind set to kill a black man. He rolled up on these brothers. They gave him the opportunity. But here's the key. What triggered him pulling his gun was not that he saw a gun. Was that the young brother said, F you, we're not pulling a gun. A witness heard him say, you can't talk to me like that. That, beloved, is the essence of the relationship between black people and white people. You are not permitted to defy even the most low-level white person that walks in this nation. And so this jury found him guilty of attempting to kill the three living brothers. But the same gun and the same act, and one of them is dead. You cannot agree to murder, because it is an unwritten law in America that a white man cannot be found guilty of a crime for killing a black man. So the other reason that we need our land is safety. Our children, our teenagers, I got a beautiful 17-year-old daughter, two beautiful nieces sitting next to her, all of you beautiful young people in here, we need to stop having children if we are not going to support an economic blueprint that will allow our children to go to the store and come back alive.
Right. Well, we're going to take it to the crowd now. We got you all riled up. So if you have any questions, please raise your hand high. And I want you to go ahead and state your name and where you're from, and direct your questions to the callers, to the panelists up front. Raise your hand. I know you got some questions out there now.
Oh, we got one hand raised. The rule is I hold
okay.
Assalamu alaikum. Brother Lewis, I'm from St. Louis, Indiana. Really enjoying the panel discussion. One of the things that the mother of Jordan Davis said, and also I believe Trayvon Martin said, is that it wasn't about race. And we listen to Elevated Voices every week. And we believe in hot black coffee parties in Louisiana, and everything is about this. How important is it for us in building a movement to talk about not just where we're going, but where we've been, and not embarrassed about the idea of separation? Because the integrations don't seem to be embarrassed about the idea of integrating, even if it means becoming a homosexual. But we seem to be a little embarrassed about the idea of separation. So I want to see what can we do to make this idea more popular. Thank y'all. Happy Thanksgiving.
Brother Nuri.
I would say, Brother Lewis, and to all of us, that we have to highlight the real models of black independent success, such as Black Wall Street, such as Rosewood, and even the highlighting of all of the things that we had prior to 75 when the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad was walking among us. And whenever we can show that this is what is the product of us doing for self, see, right now in the Jewish community, they don't have unemployment problems.
because the minister said that every time that the dollar circulates in a community three times, it reduces unemployment by 40% for that community. So if in the Jewish community the average dollar rotates 10 times before it leaves, but for black people, it's one-tenth of one time.
What?
I only think you can call that circulating. Circulate is going to be a circle, one-tenth. That's a sprint. That's a 50-yard FEME that bounces off of us and hits somebody and leaves, it's gone. But the value of that concept, if you think about circulating 10 times, that means that if Brother Robert has a dry cleaner, I have a school, Ava has a coffee shop, my brother has a grocery store, then as a cleaner, he's got to send his baby to school.
Come on.
So I'm getting some of the money from the cleaner, and I got to have some coffee because I got to stay awake to teach these children. And then she's going to have to go to the brother to get some groceries. And then he's going to have to get his aprons and stuff cleaned for all his workers at the cleaners, who also has to go to the grocery store, who has to put... So the money continues to circulate, which technically means that we are all living off of the same money. We just are putting it in each other's hands whenever the other person needs it the most. Does that make sense? So whenever you can teach that concept in circulation of money, show that every three times that it's going to reduce unemployment by 40%, that means all we needed to do is circulate seven times and we would not have no unemployed black people. And not only that, we'd be working for our own selves. Highlight Tulsa, Oklahoma. Highlight Black Wall Street. Highlight the accomplishments of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad and the modern day accomplishments of our nation. And I think we will be able to show our people a beacon of light to let them know that it is that possible, because whether we like it or not, all black people are from Missouri. The show me state. And if you can't show them where we have done, then we're not going to think that it's possible to do. So I think that would help us, Brother Lewis, if we did that.
That's right.
Thank you.
And here we have an independent black model of success with Sister Audrey Muhammad, the editor-in-chief of Virtue Magazine. How many of you have seen this before? Our wonderful sister is celebrating the 10th year anniversary, and as you can see, we have two of our panelists have been featured as cover models. They were on the cover. We have Brother Nuri Muhammad and his wonderful wife, and also Sister Ava Muhammad. So pick up Sister Audrey Muhammad's magazine. She's working hard to show a positive example. Is she in the room? I can't see her. Lights are beaming down on me. Yes, she is. Thank you. Thank you. All right, we have another question from Brother Richard. You have something you want to add?
Yes, and another thing, Brother Lewis, 45 years ago, there was a debate, separation versus integration. Okay? And at that time, we were talking theory. But we've had 45 years now of data to show that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad left, and that with self-determination and separation, integration has had its day without interference. And now we're looking at the condition of our community, and we look at the raw numbers that the wealth gap has increased. And in fact, our wealth is going down. So if you're in a race, okay, and instead you're heading towards the goal, you're going in the wrong direction, something should tell you you're in the wrong race. So we have now history, economic facts to prove that integration has not worked.
Right.
And when we had segregation, even though it was, we could eat with white folks, we had some things. I remember in my town, Western South, North Carolina, we had the same bus company. We had our own bus company, our own taxi, our own, I was born in the black house with black doctors and nurses. It's all gone now. Even the high school I went to, all gone now. So what do you want to prove that integration cannot work? We have lived that disaster.
That's right.
Now it's time for us to go back to what Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us, and let's try that and live.
Beautiful, beautiful point. Also, real quick, just to drop on YouTube, Brother Lewis and to us, you know, black people think that the definition of separation and segregation is the same thing. But separation is not segregation. Segregation means to be apart and to be exploited, mistreated, abused, and denied freedom, justice, and equality. But separation means to be apart but have everything that you need. So Billie Holiday said it best. Mama may have. Jews may have. White people may have. Remix. But God bless the people that have their own. And if, see, the concept sometimes of us being separate in a separate state or territory of our own seems like it's too big, as one of the so-called great thinkers among us called it a pipe dream. When the minister put it out there. But it wasn't a pipe dream for the Jews in Palestine. See? Why is it a pipe dream for us? But to start our people off, as we used to say on the plantation, you have to steal away. So maybe we can't get them to buy totally yet into the concept of separation. But to get them there, talk about being separate but integrated at the same time, which means we should have in every city our own Africa town, our own black town, like they have a Chinatown, a Korean town, and a Jew town. And if we can go from black town or from not little Italy, but little Africa, to having our own land, then that can help us to gradually get our people to the point where we can go for free.
May I?
Yes, sir.
The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, make your own neighborhood decent places to live. And what the challenge is for us has to be this. It has to be what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, Mr. Black Man. He said, build swimming pools for your women. What? We swim? Yeah, we swim, but the brothers just can't be looking at you. No, wait a minute. God promised us luxury. Luxury is not money. Luxury is an abundance of. How about abundance of peace of mind? That's a luxury. How about abundance of safety? That's luxury. Good home. I want a home with a pool. I'm in Texas. It get hot. I want a pool. What's wrong with that? Now, if you as a mother, a home, and all the sisters come over after NCT for a pool party, ain't no brothers there. If that fence is high enough, ain't nobody watching. One of the children falls into the pool, but you don't know how to swim. You may jump in there out of your motherly instinct. You may drown in the child drown. So that means that we must build swimming pools for our women so they can learn how to swim out of our game, so that they will be able to get exercise and join themselves, but also to save our children and each other in case one of these calamities hit and we have to swim out of our car or our house to survive. Now all this is wrapped up all together. Right? So yeah, we gotta make our own neighborhood deep. Start where we are. Make our own neighborhood deep a place to live, and then build little Africa, little black nation, whatever you want to call it, and go on and on and on until we have our own state separate. God's gonna separate us whether we want to or not. Take it or let it go.
All right, so I know we've got the time. We have two sisters that are going to ask that question, and after both questions, we have the panel respond.
Yeah, Aslam Leibon has a say about it. One of the things that I do is I say to my family and friends, I said, you got to remember that during segregation, we had our own farms, our own businesses, our own schools, our own hospitals. I said, the only time that we were not independent when we were near crack, Wall Street, all these places that they killed us. So I say to us, if we don't separate, we are always going to have these problems. So, and we can separate. And if we follow the man of God, why wouldn't we want to separate? We need to separate because we don't have no choice. Zimmerman, Trey Vaughn, we're not going to get justice in America.
Right.
We're not going to get it. So we need to move out. And if we follow the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan, we follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we know we got a car. We got weapons of mass destruction. We ain't going to worry about the crap. You know, so it's time to move out. Because you're going to have to Trayvon, you're going to have to Zimmerman, and two, we
understand that the only answer to separation, and we're going to continue to have this, I'd rather God standing up in all my knees. I'm listening to
you. All right, all right. That was a strong comment.
What she just said and what the brother asked at first is, I'm seeing that we're talking about separation, but I think we need a radical change. Is it feasible for all the nations to get up and move and go to one state and start our separation off right there? Why don't we just get up and move? Why don't we stop talking about it? Because we can't be in one state. We have all these different states that have their small little black laws. Why don't we just get up and go and make it happen?
Okay, good question.
Okay.
Dr. Ava?
Excellent, excellent. You will hear in a very short time of a call for exactly that. Not requiring or mandating that everyone move to one place, but offering a place. And it might be right here in Detroit, Michigan,
right,
where everything began. The good thing about our condition right now is that most of us are in an unstable condition. You know, it is not as though we are so invested in what we're doing and where we are that it doesn't seem feasible to leave. This is how Allah works. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad says this. He said, Allah will make you separate. And so life has become so difficult as all of these schemes go into effect that we are coming to the realization that the simplicity of all of this is in what the sister just said. Why don't we just come together? As Dr. Rizzi, Brother Nuri, Brother Robert, everybody has said, it is the natural way of living. Even in the animal and insect kingdom, all creatures live with their own kind, because that is the way the Creator made it. And you produce and then you trade on the global stage what it is your people produce and offer. Do you realize that without us there would be no NBA? We are that industry. Without us, there would be no NFL. Without us, there would be no music industry. Without us, there would really be no art, no culture. Have you noticed that when we say somebody did somebody, the next thing you know, the President of the United States, George Bush, accused a world leader of dissing him. Wherever we go, they go, but we just don't realize it. And what our problem is we're too lazy, as everyone has said, to get up and do this for ourselves. So we have accepted the flat screen television and Jerry Springer and Scandal as payment of reparations, and a cell phone and an iPad, and we're ready to go with that. Well, Allah is not ready for that. He does not accept that as payment. And judgment is going to be leveled. And in fact, that's why the weather out there is what it is right now.
Right.
We better come together in a city. The wheel is going to destroy cities. When it comes over a city, they're not going to say, oh, well, Aisha and Rasul live over there, so we're going to go around them. Those planes are going to destroy every area that is not dominated by Islam. And so if we want to survive, it's not only that we need it for food control, education, and safety, but if we are going to survive what is coming down from above our head, we better come together and live in a cluster.
Right. Right. Go on, baby. My name is Brother Todd. I'm a soldier model from the 16th and a half year, 15. And
in trying to convince our people to accept the economic program, economic blueprint, I'm out there in the streets, in the barber shops, and beauty salons, and the response that I get is one of basically mistrust. Brother Robert said that it's payment, a nickel a day, but when you mistrust, our people don't even want to give a penny, because they think, and from what they're telling me, my experience is that the money is going to buy them. And the other response is, concerns distribution, and they say that even if the nation is able to do something with this money and produce some food, how are you going to distribute it? We don't have any supermarkets, it's going to come to the mosque and then go to the Muslims and not to black people in general. So how do I deal with this general mistrust among our people?
Well, you know, that's a shame that you're running into all that negativity whenever you go, negativity. But we all are experiencing it, unfortunately. That, you know, when Willie Lynch in 1712 said that he used the fear, envy, and distrust for control purposes, he knew that the brain of the original people, according to the Bible, was hardwired originally in power, love, and sound mind, or power, love, and self-discipline. So instead of promoting those three, which is the nature of our brain, he rehardwired our brain with fear, envy, and distrust. That's the reason that it is the way that it is. However, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is not some Negro in the past that they've ever given their allegiance or support to. He has a 60-year track record of being, we don't call him the, and nobody, they never came out, no, not the Jews, not Fox, who said that y'all can't keep, why y'all call him honorable? No, they know he is honorable. He's a noble, trustworthy, honorable, selfless individual. So because we have to be the defenders of the medicine and have in our own memory bank arsenal of the resume of sacrifice of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, then we should be able to use each point on that resume as a bullet to knock out or to shoot down any of that negativity that we run into when we come across, you know, our people. However, we do have to be patient. And remember, as Jesus said, all that came before me were what? Thieves and robbers. So we know that most of the people that have come to request something from our people have been hustling our people. However, the minister promised, you know, you have to know the math. He promised that he was going to sign with his life and make everybody else in Washington fund. It's going to be transparency. This weekend we're going to get the full report of every penny that has been given and every person that has donated it. And $291 million in a year. You mean to tell me we can buy land and have distribution and groceries? Come on now. It's called Muhammad's economic blueprint, but it's really Muhammad as the manager of it, but it's really black people's blueprint. So just work on, you know, that resume of sacrifice of the medicine and, check our people's thinking. And at the end of the day, I mean, they don't ask what they're doing with their FICA money.
Right.
Where's the county doing with your money and the state doing with your money? We give the FICA, and so who is FICA anyway? Social Security? I mean, come on now. Are they taking 22% of your check without asking you, do you have money for your diapers? Do you have money for food? They take the money off the top.
Right.
You mean to tell me that you can't give a little funky nickel for your own salvation? A nickel is nothing. That's couch money. That's
seat
money. That's in the baby.
Dr. Over. And to Brother Nurse, the thing I would ask, ask the question in response to the question, what if Farrakhan gets it? What if he does? What if he did get all of it? What black man has stood up for us and called a spade a spade and a devil a devil at the expense of his own career. Do you realize this man could have been an entertainer? He was an entertainer on the rise and could have lived a luxurious life. This is a man that stood up in Washington, D.C., where our parents were slaves, and called 2 million, 1 million, but 2 million black men came, and he delivered a message to them on a day of atonement, where he called not for money. He didn't dance and take his clothes off, but he called on black men to commit themselves to God, to their woman, and to their children. But you don't have a problem giving Apple and Samsung for a plastic phone. You're paying $200 a month for 2 years. You don't have a problem giving your hand to God, and he said that you give your money to. You're paying $300 for a Nike swoosh on a sweater that a sister in the Philippines is dying to sew it together for 10 cents a day. Keep your damn nickel. That's what you tell them. And they get that crazy. This has gone on too long.
And that's
the prime minister. Prime minister got the Abraham Muhammad right there. That's a
hey,
that's right.
And I apologize.
Here's
poor language.
Hey, when it comes to Farrakhan, when it comes to Minister Farrakhan, the old team spirit is, we will kick you when you're down.
Go ahead.
He knocked her down. She bugging. I'm kicking him while he's on the ground. Let me say this. To us who represent the Honorable Louis Farrakhan in our city, if you think the mob or your study group is that building that you meet in, and it's not the city that you live in, then you missed the point.
That's right.
Minister Farrakhan did not give any of his ministers or study group leaders a mob. He gave them a city. Go take the city. And the old African proverb says, if they draw a circle to keep you out, draw a bigger circle to keep them in. Farrakhan is worthy to be defended, and we will defend him.
Go ahead.
All right. We got one more question from the audience. Okay, we got one more question. I saw her in the front. I saw the sister right here.
Okay, you talked to her.
Yeah,
she
jumped up.
Hallelujah.
Now, we only got about 4 or 5 minutes left, so we need, you know, brevity.
I just want to know, when we leave here and go back to our lives, is it going to be business as usual? Or what we going to do when we go back? Well, I want to know, personally, how can I help with the farm lady? I'm ready.
This is a good.
Well, yeah. But before you go, Brother, so at this point, we're going to just go ahead and have closing comments because we're at that point. But this is just the opening session, the kickoff of Savings Day 2014. The entire weekend is dealing with what you just asked about, sister. So we're right. You're at that point. We're good. We're here. Go ahead.
Well, you know, of course, you know, be what you want to see. And if you, the best and only way to produce change in others is to lead by example. That's what the minister teaches. So make sure that you give your 18, I don't even like your $18, 20, just give $20 and tell them to keep the $1.80 at the tip. I don't know. But go, you do your part, and then this is where the money is going for the land. The money is going for the land. The nickel a day is going for the land, and if you'd like to help us take care of the 1,500 acres of land that Dr. Ridley manages in Georgia, then you give to the three economic plans. But I would say this, most of us have a phone, and we probably have 200 to 300 contacts in the phone, and that's outside the people that you meet at the barbershop in Nashville. Well, I want to know, if you're in my phone, what you doing in my phone if I can't get a nickel for you to help the man that I'm serving? So, become an ambassador, a liaison for the economic blueprint. So as you give, go out and ask others to do the same thing. And if each one not just teachers one, but teachers in this case 100, then if all of us do our part, we will have the countless millions participating in the economic blueprint. We'll have land that we can supply food, clothing, and shelter for ourselves.
On Saturday, the Minister of Agriculture will be having a workshop at 1:30, from 1:30 to 3 o'clock in the room 430 A and B. So, sister, please come to that workshop, and we will talk to you directly about what you want to do. And also, this summer, July 4th weekend, we have what's called Founders Day, where we ask people to come to the farm. We've been doing it for like 10 years now. And you come down, you do some picking, you do some canning, you do some eating. You get a chance to really see what farm life is all about. That's this July 4th weekend. Okay? But Saturday at 1:30, room 430 A and B.
Yeah. Malik Jackini, closing statement, please.
First of all, it's such an honor to be on this panel with these luminaries. And there's not really much I can add. I've been saying to Dr. Ridgely that while we're trying to figure out how to get these trucks up from Georgia, in the meantime, you can buy food right here in Detroit at D-Town Farm. We want to encourage you to support the efforts of black people who are doing for self. And I hear the frustration in several people's voices about the distance between the talk and the action. And I have that same frustration. I'm a doer. And so it's about making it happen, getting it done. And so we just want to encourage you to support those who are doing.
I'm saying to you, sisters and brothers, this is not a normal statement. This is different. We have to pivot from here, and we have to make our word bond, and it cannot be business as usual. We must now help the Honorable Louis Farrakhan fulfill the mission of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and go out and save our people. Detroit is a good place to start. There's going to be a lot discussed this weekend because everybody sees a problem. Some of us see an opportunity. And we need to go ahead and do what we got to do to make our word bond. Thank you.
Dr. Ava?
I just
want to
thank the Elevated Places team. I want to thank Sister LaDonna, Sister Rona, Brother Bobby, my co-host, Brother Terrence, our Elevated Places contributor, Dr. Ridley Muhammad, incredible. They're guests, but they're our brothers. We know their level of knowledge. And above all, you, the audience, the live audience here and on the phone, Elevated Places was developed as a forum for us to have these kinds of discussions so that we could talk and talk until we get tired of talking and begin to do. So I thank you. This is our, we're in our third year now, and we are ready to move into action. Thank you all for being here and for getting Savior's Day off to a wonderful start. Assalamu alaikum.
That's it. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum. All of the brothers and sisters here will be glad to share your information. They'll be glad to give you their information on how to keep in contact with them. They all are on Twitter, social media, websites, all kinds of things. So,
thank you for listening to and participating in Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Muhammad. Be sure to join us right here every Thursday at blogtalkradio.com/Elevated Places. If you have enjoyed our show today, please bookmark Elevated Places as one of your favorites. And remember, we are all preparing for a brand new world.